Hello, and thank you for joining us for the RealCom Budgeting and Forecasting webinar. I'm Sarah Benfred with RealCom. We'll learn about this education is supported by our gold sponsors, Lion Point Group, Yardi, and MRI, and we will learn more about these companies throughout the session. Today's webinar moderator is Chuck Neiswanger. Chuck has over 30 years of successful leadership experience in technology-related roles, ranging from operating his own consulting company, Neisense Consulting, to directing the IT strategy and operations of a real estate investment management firm. So thank you very much for moderating, and I'll turn it over to you, Chuck.
All right, good. Thank you, Sarah. I love the highlights of the RealCom Digi Awards. It's just always like a family reunion. So. Thanks for playing that. That's always a lot of fun. It's exciting to be back in the moderator chair for this RealCom webinar, but I don't think you've given us the sexiest topic for a RealCom webinar. You know, it's not like artificial intelligence or blockchain or tenant experience that are so hot today. We're going to be talking about budgeting and forecasting. And that has actually been given a label as, quote, a necessary evil. I think I even heard that during some of my interview calls with our panel, so we'll talk more about that. It's been labeled one of the most painful processes in our industry, one that has been described as taking weeks of a group exercise, sometimes hundreds of man hours, and the result is obsolete the day it gets published. And we'll see how our panel describes it today, but first, you know, what we can do is put up the poll, Sarah, and we'll get a poll of the audience to see why it is that everyone attended the webinar today. So hopefully, as you're looking at this, we've got about 88 participants online. You should be able to select what's most important to you, and maybe we'll even tailor some of our comments to that as we go along. It's good that nobody just wants to be around and share the pain. And so hopefully, if you've picked other, maybe during the comment section, you'll tell us what it is that you're looking to get out of the webinar, or if you don't get it as we go along, just be sure and send us a note. All right, looks pretty good. Look, again, probably over 50% of the audience, looks like nearly 60, trying to look for a better way than what they're currently doing. And so we'll talk through some of that. So I appreciate that. All right, so I'm going to advance the slide. It probably makes sense to set the stage of the webinar to understand the difference between a budget and forecast. And I could probably ask that question and get different answers from a lot of different people. But a budget is defined, this is on accountingtools.com, so I didn't make it up, what a business wants to achieve. And it, it generally involves a lot of people sitting around a conference table in a bad mood, not having much fun. I see on the bottom one, it could be interrupted by the random IT guy coming in to fix the meeting conference room and the projection system. So. Not generally a fun process, but again, a necessary evil as described before. A couple of characteristics of a budget, certainly detailed financial representation of future results based on what is known to be true at that time, whenever the budget process is usually being done, which is typically an annual process, and it gets compared to actual results, which would be rear-facing, to determine the variances from budget. And if you happen to be in one of those organizations that use the budget to actual comparisons for performance-based compensation, sometimes that's not such a great thing. And so other ways to describe budgeting with memes, I could find plenty of them out there. There was no shortage of those as you look. Certainly the one I like the best, no money for Meow Mix, you've got to be kidding me. I love that just because I do dad jokes, and that looks like a fun one to steal. So hopefully one of these you can identify with. We'll move on to forecasting. A forecast is a statement of a budget, of a business's actual expectations for results, usually in a more summarized format. typically involves representation from all departments, so you'd have a lot more people sitting around. And that can provide any level of changing conditions that would have some sort of material impact. And characteristics of a forecast include limited to major revenue and expense items, possibly including cash flows. I think Porter, when we talked to him, he'll refer to these as needle movers. It's updated regularly, depending upon the business, typically monthly or quarterly. But during this webinar, we're also going to be talking about continuous forecasting, which is good because several people selected that in our poll. The changing operations conditions could be poorly performing retail, weather-related issues, tenants who, based on published results, might have a high probability of default, maybe rapidly declining occupancy rates due to some economic factors. So all of those need to be considered, but no variance comparisons are generally part of a forecast, and it's generally not used for performance-based compensation. And it has been described by many as realistically a more useful tool than a budget. So we'll ask our panelists about that. It's, of course, not any shortage of memes for forecasting as well. I could easily find these. And what's interesting is when companies are operating primarily on spreadsheets, which I almost bet that the 60% have said they're looking for a better way, I would almost bet a large percentage of those were probably operating on spreadsheets. But as soon as new guidance is given or a specific request to require a significant change to the forecast, it could result in frustration with accounts and senior analysts and such. So the key difference between a budget and a forecast, as I just showed you there, is that a budget is the plan for where the business wants to go, while the forecast is an indicator of where it is actually going. And we're going to explore the pains and the joys of budgeting and forecasting today, and we'll explore some of the new tools that even allow continuous forecasting. And I do want to ask our panel about how artificial intelligence might be used to make these budget and forecasting processes not only easier, but potentially more precise. So on that note, let's bring in our first guest. That's Porter Ballew. Porter is the VP and CIO of Federal Realty Investment Trust, responsible for IT strategy, services, operations, and team members at Federal Realty, and has over 25 years of experience in CRE information management. So Porter, I want to hear how Federal Realty has transformed themselves over the 52-year industry that you show on your slide. And hopefully you haven't been with them for all 52 of those years. So take it away, and let me hear how that's going.
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate the introduction and appreciate the opportunity to chat about budgeting and forecasting. I've been in the real estate industry not 52 years, but 25 years, and it seems as though budgeting and forecasting has been a pain point throughout that entire at least through my career, and is a problem yet to be solved fully, and so glad to participate on a panel where we can talk about how to finally tame this beast. What I'd like to do is address three slides. First of all, just introduce everyone who's not familiar with Federal Realty, who we are, the scope of our business, what our strategy is. Then drill down a little bit into our application landscape with a focus on Argus Enterprise, which is the tool we've recently implemented for our budgeting and forecasting, and how that fits in overall. And then on the third slide, talk about some of the lessons learned and challenges that we've experienced in budgeting and forecasting and open that up for how it relates to others on the call. So, first of all, as you mentioned, we've been around for 52 years. We're one of the oldest. I'm not sure we are the oldest, but we're certainly one of the oldest real estate investment trusts. We are primarily a retail REIT with a focus on open air and lifestyle centers. We have a growing portfolio of mixed-use facilities, which also include multifamily and office properties. We only have around 100 properties, depending on how you slice and dice our properties, but we operate at a smaller scale than some of our peers. and we've only got about 350 employees, which gives us some flexibility and agility, both from a business standpoint and certainly creates some opportunities from an IT standpoint. Our focus is on high-end properties in certain markets where we see strategic value. So again, that we don't have a large portfolio of locations that provides us some operational efficiencies, focusing on the markets that you see displayed on the map in the upper right-hand corner. So over our 52 years, we've been very successful, and we've been very successful because we've been agile and have been able to respond to, obviously, a very volatile retail industry. And one of the things that I've really liked about Federal Realty, I have not been here 52 years, I've been here 4.5 years, but I've monitored Federal Realty from afar as an industry leader in technology. And we're, in fact, on our third, in the process of doing a third generation refresh of our technology portfolio, meaning Federal Realty was an early adopter of technology as late as the early 80s and implemented CTI and some custom developed solutions that were available at that time, even some really funky stuff with and advanced stuff with Lotus Notes. Then they went through a refresh in the early 2000s, which was needed, obviously, as technology had advanced. But it was very painful because so many of the operational efficiencies had been incorporated into our operating environment. So it's very, obviously, when you've got, if processes built around technology, when you change that technology, that is a difficult change to go through as opposed to a greenfield environment. And we're at a point now where we need to do yet another refresh. So many of our tools, and I'll talk a little bit more about this on my next slide, but we had invested heavily into the CTI realm, DynaBudget, portfolio of applications, which were very nicely integrated, but obviously it's time to move on from that. So what we're doing now with our IT strategy is a best-in-class approach of highly configurable and customizable solutions that we can use to adapt to our what we consider efficient business processes. But it certainly puts a premium on integration. So right now, we're using Argus Enterprise for budgeting and forecasting, and Oracle JD Edwards as our ERP with some PropertyX, SharePoint, and Business Objects as part of that suite. We've also acquired and implemented some middleware for Argus Enterprise called Argus DXW. For those of you that are familiar with the Enterprise database, it's highly proprietary, but they do have a tool. They don't market it much, but I think that strategy is changing, that takes their proprietary data structure and makes it a nice data warehouse, highly indexed, tall and skinny is the way they describe it, data format that we then pull into a data warehouse that we call FritWorld that is essentially the hub for all our data exchange between our various applications. We put a premium on data governance and have a highly rigid data structure to make sure that all of our data across all of our application conforms to our data governance model. Argus Enterprise has worked well for us. Everything migrated from Dyna to Argus pretty smoothly, but we're getting a lot of different features and functionality and nice overlap with what happens in our acquisitions group as well. We did that upgrade about two and a half years ago, and there certainly were some challenges, but I'm having a little difficulty with my screen here. Let's see.
I'm getting the slides back up just a second.
Okay, thanks.
Porter, go ahead. You were going to describe that. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to go through some of our lessons learned as part of our upgrade. I think our biggest challenge is what we're going to do with recoveries. As a retail REIT, we are obviously very dependent on making sure that we've got accurate CAM recoveries and that we're projecting those CAM recoveries properly, okay? We don't have an integration between our JD Edwards recovery pools and the artist enterprise recovery pools. That's still a manual process for us. And so we're exploring various options for how we're going to integrate those, but that's a problem yet to be solved. I mean, we're still in the process of implementing recoveries for JD Edwards. So one of the things that we're considering doing is our projections for in-place releases in JD Edwards as in an alternate ledger type, and then migrating those into Argus Enterprise as part of an integration. So I think I mentioned we use SSIS as integration tool, data warehouse, increment, full refresh. So we've got active integrations except for the CAM recoveries, which is a challenge for us.
Would you say, you mentioned data governance being really strong, would you say that's one of your precursors for anyone who's about to take on a budgeting and forecasting process? They need to have that as a primary predecessor of anything like that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think data governance and integration are two sides of the same coin from our perspective, and we treat those as a core competency of our IT department. I know in a lot of environments and a lot of portfolios, they don't necessarily have the structure in the IT department to support that, but we do, and we have very strict rules that say, okay, if you're going to be presenting defining a property this way on our external website, it's got to be consistent with how it's done in our business intelligence environment, which is consistent with how it's done in JD Edwards, which is consistent with how it's done on Argus Enterprise. That trickles down to how we define units and how we define tenants, and how we define our divisions and categories. And it's a challenge because I think we like to enable our different business users to have a lot of flexibility. So trying to impose those standards across a company that likes to be agile and flexible has been a challenge. But what people are learning is it really does enhance our ability to do really robust forecasting, variances to get with actuals, and consistency of data across all our systems.
Got it. Did you have one more slide? Because we need to move on.
I'm ready to yield the floor.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Porter. So good to understand. I've got more questions, and we'll get that. Come back to those. Let me bring in Cecilia Lee. She is the Senior VP of IT with Urban Edge Properties. With over 19 years of technology experience, she delivers vision, critical analysis, and recommendations to stakeholders while leading cross-functional teams with a strong focus on customer service. And Cecilia, with Urban Edge being such a young company, it must have been just an exciting challenge to take on a blank slate. So I can't wait to hear more about it.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for the introduction and for the opportunity to have me here with all of these wonderful peers. I have been very lucky to be joining Urban Edge. Urban Edge had a very unique opportunity 3 years ago when we spun off from Vornado, and to basically create our own company from scratch, right? With money, which is always a plus. And so, I apologize. I have a sore throat, so my voice is going in and out. But let me just give you a little bit of background of who Urban Edge is, and then I'll get into what we're doing with our budgeting and forecasting. So Urban Edge Properties, it's a REIT. We acquire, develop, own, and manage our properties. We're right now focused on shopping centers, but have a strategy to move towards mixed-use properties. We own a portfolio of about 16.3 million square feet and in 88 properties, and we manage about 3 million for others. And so like I was mentioning earlier, 3 years ago, we had this exciting opportunity, and which put us in a unique position, right, to reevaluate our systems. And specifically when we're talking about budgeting and forecasting, you know, we asked ourselves, you know, is the software that we currently have in place, which is the legacy system, right, that's been highly customized for over a decade and a half, right, does it still meet our needs? as a new company with a new executive team. And so, you know, when we ask ourselves that question, we use this spin-off ASIM marker to address our new needs, right? And so while Urban Edge used this opportunity, the spin-off opportunity as a marker, I am sure that many of you guys are also having similar questions. Maybe it's not a spin-off, but it could be, you know, you have a new executive team leading the BNF team, or you have the same executive team that it's looking for a new solution to make things better. As we saw in the polls today, many of you are looking for better ways to do things, right? And that's actually one of our hashtags that we have internally at Urban Edge, right? We're always looking at hashtag efficiency, hashtag how can we make it better. And so on that note, we took the opportunity, and after answering all these questions, right, is our current system sustainable? What is it going to be the transition? How is it going to affect? What is this transformation going to look like, right? How is this going to impact, and what's going to be this change? And so after answering all of these questions, we decided to use these three tools to handle our budgeting and forecasting. So we use MRI commercial management and integrate it with MRI investment management and with Insight Software spreadsheet server. With these three tools together, we were able to achieve transparency and efficiency. So because all of these three are integrated, we're able to utilize actual data without having to re-enter the information into a spreadsheet, which then would have allowed room for data entry mistakes. This also allows, using MRI IM, allow us to reforecast at a granular level. So for us, our executive team, they were accountants, right? And so they're very much about numbers, granularity. And so MRI IM allows us to really get into that kind of depth and for years, right? So it allows us to forecast for 20 years, which is really important for us in the retail world. And not only that, but it also allows us to do multiple market lease assumptions, right? So it's not just implementing just a generic market lease assumption, right? But we are able to say, for instance, an assumption for properties that are less than 1,000 square feet, 5,000 to 10,000 square feet, 10,000 to 20,000 square feet, and so forth, as well as by geography, right? Or by even property, because not two properties or geographies are the same. Another example is having the ability to exercise options. You know, what will our reforecast look like if we were to exercise X, Y, and Z options? So again, it's all about that ability to do it at a granular level through a system, right, that everybody has visibility and access, right? When I say everybody, I'm saying everybody that's allowed, right, of course. And so this integration between MRI IM, CM, and the spreadsheet server allow us to produce these monthly and quarter reporting processes. It in fact, was a major impact for us. So for us, detailed reporting packages are required by our executive to interpret and then message that result to our shareholders and investors. So through this integration, we were able to produce these reports in just within a click, right? Whereas before, our team had to take about 2 weeks plus to gather this information alone, right? And so we were able to achieve all of these efficiencies just by integrating these three tools. This further allow us to then use that time, you know, the two weeks plus time that they use to gather information, now they can analyze, and it also helped us through our auditing process, because these systems allowed us to log a history of all the activities, which is critical for a public company, of course. So with that said, we're looking, of course, at continuing our process of bettering our solution, our processes, and we're very much looking forward to the next step to integrate our recoveries into our budgeting. We just finished automating the recoveries tool in MRI, and it's highly customized. We're very happy with it. It's less manual work, it's automated, and so we're looking forward to that next step to integrate that portion into our budgeting. So with that said, I think I'm at the end of my time, and hopefully I was able to give you a quick overview of what we do.
Well, Cecilia, I want to focus on one thing before moving on to Lion Point Group. You mentioned something that I think is really key it's like a test question, you know, the teacher's sort of stomping their feet here. So of our, you know, our 109 participants dialed in looking for a better way, couldn't they do similar exercises as you did with your market lease assumptions by grouping properties in the way they perform similarly, less than 1,000 square feet, 10,000 to 20, by geography, and now the market lease assumptions for the forecast start to become more accurate and more precise. Does that make sense?
Right.
They could take that away right now, right? They could go back and look at some of those market lease assumptions that they have and say, how could we group these into logical groupings?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you have a tool that allows you to do that, that's fantastic. For us, we use MRI-IM, and it allows us to do this on not only a granular level, but from a high level, meaning that we can spread it through all of our properties. So, like, it makes that process very quick. Like, within 3 clicks, we're able to put these market lease assumptions. So sure, you can take this away and definitely apply it to your process. Hopefully, you have a tool that allows you to do that very quickly.
Got it. Okay, I've got more questions for you, but we're going to go ahead and move on, and we'll all circle back up towards the end in our group discussion. And I want to bring on Nick Moore from Lion Point Group to tell us a little bit about what they're doing as a company before we get into the case study. Go ahead, Nick.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Thank you very much, Chuck, and welcome everyone to the webinar. So just briefly, Lion Point Group is a global real estate and alternative investments, operations and technology consulting and advisory firm. We work with clients across front to back office operational challenges and helping them with a combination of process and technology solutions. We're an international firm with over 75 resources with offices across the US as well as UK, Europe, and just recently in Australia. And we cover the gamut from strategy and roadmap through business operational transformation initiatives with clients, and that most generally ties in with technology assessments, selections, implementations, and integrations. And most often these days, that's very tied in also with the data side, so enterprise performance management, business intelligence, and data visualization. So moving on to property budgeting. As Chuck said, it's not necessarily the most thrilling topic, and it is a necessary evil. But why is it that it still takes so long in so many firms? And we talk to clients often about this, and have clients who talk about starting their budget process sometime around August, and that process running through beyond year end and still trying to get agreement and finalization on budgets well into January of the following year. And a lot of the problems are to do with the fact that in property we do quite granular budgets. We're going right down to sub-account detail. So you may have multiple cleaning accounts as an example and are really trying to budget out the different components of those categories within an asset to make sure that you're getting an accurate perspective on what the operating plan for next year may be. There's generally a lack of integration between source systems, It's great if you're like the earlier presenters who have one core property management and accounting platform, but then once you start to move up to investment managers who are outsourcing property management to multiple third parties, they have the added challenge now of different operating partners using different accounting and property management platforms. And often the more common tool that people fall back on for budgeting is Excel. And as we know, I mean, Excel's wonderful and awful at the same time, and can become a real challenge to manage multiple Excel models across the business. Many old systems have black box calculations, so data goes in and data comes out, but it's quite unclear exactly how the calculations are being performed within those systems. And often there's too much focus on the wrong areas. So if you think about what behavior you want to drive at the property level, it's really on your income and capex. What are the items that are really going to drive the needle for performance of that asset? And we find that people get very bogged down in the minutiae of operating expenses, and that's typically because the KPIs of the property management team are aligned to that. So they'll start to game the system for the outcome that they're looking for from their own personal performance reward basis. So we recently did a project with Barings Alternative Investments, and Barings has a large property portfolio across the United States, across all asset classes, with commercial, multifamily, and hospitality. They use MRI as a core property management and accounting platform for their commercial assets. They have a RealPage platform on the multifamily side, and then for hospitality, it's operating partners, different systems. So Barings' legacy platform was a highly customized and convoluted Excel process, and that Excel template would be sent out to all of the properties, and there were hundreds of spreadsheets, and they have about 500 different participants in the budget process. One key problem they had is key man risk, as they had one individual who had created this very complex Excel model with lots of macros and internal calculations, and that person left the organization, so there was a lack of knowledge of how that budget consolidation process really worked. And as I mentioned, very granular, so thousands of rows on big complex assets of granular budget detail. The other problem with the legacy platform is, being Excel, there was a lot of emailing of Excel models back and forth between property manager and asset manager. And there's a lot of time that's chewed up in that process. And then manual aggregation of those worksheets. So asset managers who are looking after a portfolio of assets and portfolio managers who have an even larger portfolio are then having to aggregate all of these manual Excel spreadsheets. And once they've rolled them up, they then are able to see outliers and push back the property managers to question, why are you projecting a certain increase on a sub-account that we don't feel should be increased? So Barings looked at the various systems in the market, and they decided to move to a cloud-based collaborative platform, and they chose Anaplan for that. And they were able to design and deploy their annual budgeting process in Anaplan within 10 weeks. A key component was they wanted to minimize the change management implication, given they had about 500 people down at the property level. The change management is a big factor. So they maintained the same look and feel for the budget submission process, but behind the scenes, the capabilities of Anaplan kicked in to highlight outliers and potential issues and force property managers to add a comment so that the asset managers were able to react much more quickly. The other advantage they got from Anaplan was that it supports all the asset types dynamically in one budgeting solution. So it caters to the nuances of all the asset classes that they have today, plus if they were to go into something else, like student housing as an example, they can also build that out very quickly. And it has user-level security, so they're able to define the security for each of those users by firm. So it's feeding data from multiple source systems. In their case, they have, as I mentioned, MRI. They use AssetEye, which is now a RealPage product, PAM, and Argus Enterprise. And all of that data is being extracted through CSV into a data hub in Anaplan. The budget process and the reforecast process is performed within Anaplan and drives out reporting on the back end. So they've moved to a real-time budget submission, as well as the ability to do ongoing rolling reforecasts with ongoing feeds of actuals from the source systems.
You know,
so finally,
go ahead, Nick.
Yes, Chuck?
I was going to say, let's go ahead and wrap it up, and I have a very quick question for you.
All right, this is the last one. So the advantages for Barings were ease of use, the fact that it's been able to be tailored specifically to their budgeting and planning process. So the dashboards are very intuitive and drive the behavior that they wanted down at the asset level. So it's supporting revenue expense, capital budgeting, and reforecasting. And the results are then posted back to the source systems, in their case, MRI and AssetEye, the PAM being two of their core source systems. And that's my brief summary.
Okay, and Nick, you know, again, as we think about this, and I apologize too, Nick, I did not read your bio, but I think you gave us a good background on LionPoint. You are labeled as the executive director, and I know you're a founding partner at LionPoint Group. How long has LionPoint Group been around? Yeah.
LionPoint Group started in 2014.
Okay. All right. So clearly a good 5 years of experience. And one thing that I did know too, and you had brought Neil Elliott on as well, but your coverage in North America, Europe, and Australia is pretty vast and pretty wide. One thing that I observed from this that I think, again, the people who dialed in ought to be considering is that idea of losing the person that drives the spreadsheet is a huge risk to companies that have these rolled up models. And the other piece is that role-based security. So once you have access to the Excel spreadsheet, anybody can see any things. Whereas I think these tools, and Anaplan is not the only one. Of course, there's Adaptive Insights and Host Analytics, and IBM has tools, and people are probably looking at a variety of these. But they have that ability to have that role-based security. So executives can now do some what if and run scenarios on their own where they would have never done that on a spreadsheet, right?
Right, exactly.
And
as you pointed out, I think there are a number of these disruptive technologies that have come into the market, but they do operate very nicely as add-ons to core systems in the real estate space, so MRI, ERD, etc.
And Nick, I see a question that came in about, does that include multifamily now? I think that was an issue before. I don't know that it is now.
Yes, it does. So Barings has a big multifamily portfolio, and that's been built out also within Anaplan. So I think if you look at this slide here, you'll see that they've got different modules for multifamily and commercial, and there's another one also for hospitality.
Got it. Might be worth a look for those who are on the call. And we're going to move on. Nick, thank you so much for that. We have an opening video from Yardi. Let's take a look at that.
Commercial real estate is changing, and the change is accelerating. Get ready to reimagine, improve, and elevate the world of commercial real estate with the right technology to power your strategy. Are you ready to reimagine space and turn vacancy back into revenue? Meet Yardi Cube, the award-winning co-working solution that helps you build a thriving co-working community. Are you ready to improve energy operations? Get to know Yardi Pulse. The energy performance platform helps you operate your buildings from anywhere. Are you ready to elevate asset performance? Introducing Yardi Elevate, a technology suite that connects every aspect of real estate operations for a holistic approach to asset health. Commercial real estate is changing, and the change is accelerating. Are you ready?
All right, so I think we have Todd Hipsch, who's the industry principal for commercial real estate at Yardi. And Todd brings more than 25 years of experience in the real estate and construction, allowing him to combine both business and technology solutions with industry-specific knowledge to create value for customers. So Todd, there must be tremendous opportunities for value creation with budgeting and forecasting. And I think, again, not to dwell on the Yardi Cube, Pulse, and Elevate, but with co-working being so popular, with the HVAC and energy costs, the idea of increasing revenue with co-working, decreasing costs with something like Pulse, begins to impact the forecast in a very, very good way. So I'm just going to let you describe the process here, and go ahead and take it away.
Great. Thanks, Chuck. So I was going to talk about continuous forecasting, which is something that we've focused on under the kind of these Elevate areas for us in the past couple of years. So a group of customers really wanting to move towards that more continuous forecasting model. So you talked about in the beginning, you know, a lot of budgeting forecasting is done quarterly, sometimes monthly. Some companies are still doing it annually, where there's this just huge chunk of work. And I liked your slide. The kitten one was pretty funny. where that's the reaction. There's just so much work to do. It's like, okay, here's budgeting and forecasting season, and it's this 90 days of pain, and companies go through that, and there's just a significant amount of time and effort. So the continuous forecasting model says, let's have less of that and less of this big one-time effort, and let's just have iterative tweaks much more frequently, even weekly or daily, and in an effort to move towards this more continuous forecasting model. And so that's what I was going to talk about for a couple minutes here today. So the goal of this group of customers, and this is a mix of asset classes, a mix of REITs and owner-operators, mostly commercial, office, retail, some multifamily, so kind of a mix of about a dozen customers that kind of worked on this with us in their desire to move toward this model. And one of the things that they surmised was, you know, we think we can cut out a significant amount of time and effort in the budgeting process, and we can improve accuracy. And that was some of the driving forces behind moving to this continuous forecasting. So there's a couple parts to it. First one is integrating everything together. We've seen some of the folks talk about that on the call, the importance of that. So being able to have and pull in your property management information, construction information, your data from deal flow, right? Being able to click on a deal in one click and have that pulled into the forecast or the budget, you know, just the ability to access all that information in one real-time environment, debt, fixed asset data, you know, amortized, you know, information, you know, those are most of the main components. So that was one thing that we wanted to ensure happened, that access to all that data real-time was available to help facilitate and move towards this continuous forecasting process. The less time and effort it required to move data from database A to database B and bring data to different places, we felt was one way to help facilitate the move to this model. The second one, and this was interesting, Nick talked a little bit about this just a minute ago, but the second big manual process we saw, at least with this group of customers we were working with, is one of the manual components of a lot of what they were doing is there's a disconnect between asset managers, property managers, leasing executives, and let's call it the finance group. And so the manual component was, how do we get my MLAs updated and into a system? And typically that was manual. That was some of the spreadsheets that we've heard on the call a couple of times. That was typically spreadsheets. It was emails. It was weekly phone calls. It was, how do we get the knowledge out of the heads of those people in asset management and leasing, and how do we get that into a back office budgeting forecasting system? And we've seen, I don't know, I would guess 80% of the companies that we've worked with, that was a manual component, and that took time and effort. And so in an effort to get rid of that manual work, we looked at some tools to help do that. So the view of this, let me go to the next one. So continuous improvement, right, these iterative tweaks down to a daily basis, particularly around MLA updates, and moving that directly to the field. So having an asset manager or leasing person have a dashboard, have a user interface that's intuitive enough where they could go in and just process that, you know, real time, and not have to wait till the end of the week or the month or the quarter and have a bunch of spreadsheets. And so that was the effort to remove that. And really what what we saw there is some of the newer technologies that have come out in the last 10 years have kind of helped enable this. So being able to build very intuitive dashboard type tools that a leasing exec or an asset manager will go into is what helped facilitate you know, the move towards this forecasting model. So that impacts accuracy, streamlines the process. You know, the way we looked at it was single source of truth, real time access to all the information needed for the forecasting process. Like I mentioned, whether that be construction or deals or fixed assets or, you know, all the different components that feed this, providing real time results. And that's a little bit about the model that this group of customers wanted to achieve. So we looked at it from taking live property data, whether that's recoveries, taking real time, you know, your recovery setup, your deals, as I mentioned, from the deal flow system, construction, CapEx, debt, amortized, you know, loan information, fixed asset information, take all that stuff from real time actual data and replicate that into the budget forecast, and then overlay assumptions on top of that to create the forecast. The piece on top of that we thought was interesting, similar to Nick's discussion, was in our term, we call it Forecast Manager, but that was the new kind of UI that enabled this to be pushed out to the field and created, you know, removed the back and forth of the spreadsheets and the manual processes. So the Forecast Manager, where the lease, whether it's in every organization is a little different in terms of who does it, but whether it's somebody in leasing or asset management can go right into a dashboard and quickly see what's at risk, what they need to address, added an MLA, updated MLA, do a spec lease, and have that flow real time into the budget was the goal of that tool. Having the ability to click on a deal and deal flow and pull that in, or a construction project from the construction module, and just simplify that for those users is what kind of the focus of the project was. So the results of the project: increased budget accuracy, reduction in Excel back and forth and manual processes, improved collaboration by everybody having real-time access to the same data, more up-to-date budgets, ability to deliver forecasts. Some of the customers, again, depends on the type of company, but some of the folks really wanted this to deliver forecast results to investors in Wall Street faster, and so that was a real driver behind it. And monitor the business for more accurate rates. So one of the things that came out of this project was, because it's iterative, we're able to quickly see, you know, we started with the MLAs, you know, in a certain way, and then every month we see them get edited. So the ability to quickly go update those geographic-based MLA profiles, so all the MLAs for this asset class in this city or this geo, being able to go update those in a more timely manner just helped drive that continuous process improvement, because it wasn't waiting till year end to say, okay, we were off by X percent in this market, let's update that at this quarter or year end, but to update those MLAs in a more continuous manner was part of what drove it. Some of the metrics were interesting. I had a quote from one of the industrial company, industrial REIT, that reduced the effort in the forecasting process by about 30%. And greatly improved accuracy. So I think there are some strong business drivers and proof points from a business metric standpoint of reducing effort and providing more timely, accurate information in, with this continuous forecasting model. So that's just the experience that I wanted to share with everybody.
All right, Todd. Very, very, very good. You mentioned a couple of things. Again, as the teacher, I want to, you know, stomp my foot and wave my hands and identify the test questions, right, for the people who are listening. Because one thing you said, you did not have to sacrifice frequency versus accuracy. That was thing one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and two, the multiple data sources were coming in. They needed a place to go. So the necessity for a data warehouse, not only in this picture, but also in Nick's picture before, extremely important, right?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, for Miardi, we have that all in a single platform, integrated platform. We don't use the data warehouse concept, but certainly if you're going to use third-party products then and link them together, then that would be a key component, right? You'd have to bring those together. In our case, that's not necessary because they're all connected to the same.
Right, but many of the people on this call they're going to be VTS clients, and they're going to want to integrate lease data, and so they're going to need to have that. And you're open to that. Yardi's open to that idea, and it has very nice API interface with VTS.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, I that's something that definitely needs to be created if there's a mix of solutions out there. So yeah.
Got it. So when people are, and I say that because if people are coming from spreadsheets or antiquated tools, or they're on Timberline and they're looking for their next solution and they really need to think about what they're going to do, I think those are important things to think about. So let's, thanks again, Todd. Really, did you have a final comment?
No, I think that was it. Thanks, Chuck.
Okay, good. Let's move on. We've got a video to introduce MRI software.
We're redefining what it means to be comprehensive and what it means to be open. We're creating a platform that redefines flexibility and freedom, so you have the foundation to adapt, grow, and thrive your way. We invented real estate software almost 5 decades ago, and today we're redefining it for the future with you. MRI.
Very good. All right, that looks awesome. Andy Welkley is with us today from MRI Software. He's the product marketing manager for MRI, where he drives product strategy and direction for MRI's financial, commercial, and retail property management solutions. And Andy, you've already seen process transformation taking place with clients as well as within your own company. So this is very exciting. So go ahead, let's hear more about it.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. Thanks, Chuck. Really appreciate the opportunity. I was nervous about going last because of the great panelists that we have, and those fears were realized. A lot of great content so far. And I want to touch on one of the things that's been consistent throughout, and that's been the management of assumptions. With the old joke about what happens when we assume rings true, as many of those jokes do, there's a shred of truth in all humor. But Chuck mentioned how the goal is to become more precise as we look at trying to fill in the gaps where we have uncertainty in our businesses. And that's really what the budgeting and forecasting process is about. And I'll add even long-term planning to that. There's a lot of talk now about what type of time horizon should we have given the volatility in the market. Is it still productive to look out beyond 3 to 5 years? As I was kind of putting together my thoughts for today, I came across a professor at Boston College named Jerry Kane. And Jerry works with a lot of the large technology companies, doing some future planning work with them. And he has an approach that he kind of terms zoom in and zoom out. And I think that really applies in our space as well, especially as we look at the process of budgeting and forecasting, and really as we look into strategic planning and long-term investment modeling. It's critical for us to understand what the business looks like over the course of the next 5, 10, 20 years. But how do we put that in context of the business operations that we have going on in the present, or the recent past or the near future? We really need to be able to look at that, that zooming in process, to be able to evaluate our long-term planning on an ongoing basis. As Todd pointed out, that process of looking at things on an iterative process applies not just in the short term over 24 months, but really over the long term as we build that strategic plan. Are the short-term metrics moving us toward our overall goals that we've set out over those longer time horizons? And really what we have is the opportunity to use the budgeting process and the forecasting tools that we have to kind of manage that. And let's put things into a little bit more context as we think about assumptions from that perspective. We've heard several of the panelists and Chuck today outline what some of the objectives are for budgeting and forecasting, and it's creating that plan that we can move the business forward for what we want to achieve from the operations of our business. We can create that budget for the year using the tools and techniques that you've heard about today. As Nick mentioned, we want to move toward an agreed set of metrics or a set of KPIs. But those KPIs really need to not exist in a vacuum of an annual plan, but really support the business as it moves forward. And as Cecilia pointed out, we want to make sure that those metrics are transparent so that they can be consumed not just by the folks who are on the front lines managing to an expense budget or driving a revenue number, but we also need to expose those numbers beyond just those groups and allow that data to be consumed by the long-term planning folks, maybe the investment modeling and the investment management team. It's really important that those groups are aligned so that we can begin to get those assumptions across the whole organization. As we look at volatility in the context of both short-term planning and long-term strategy, there are three questions that we can ask. Does the annual budget and the near-term forecast support that long-term strategic plan? And as we forecast out in the near term, are those numbers in line with some of the planning that we've done across the 4-, 5-, and 6-year plans? As the current data comes in, are we tracking to that forecast? That leads us to the second question. Are those assumptions that we use to build that long-term plan actually finding their way into the assumptions that we're using for the short-term planning? It's really important that we're comparing apples to apples and that those assumptions are consistent. Because as we measure that performance, we're continually testing those assumptions. We're able to get more precise, as Chuck mentioned at the beginning. So if we're using numbers in the budgeting process, are they still representative based on the conditions that we're seeing in the marketplace? We do have a variety of levers to pull as we look at building those assumptions. We can use the tools that we have available to us to create what-if scenarios, maybe assign probabilities to certain levers, market rental growth, tenant exposure, what's our tenant mix look like? And we can assign probabilities based on historical data or make assumptions moving forward. And as I mentioned, those assumptions are often contained in that long-term plan. Now, maybe the market conditions have changed. And if the short-term numbers and that variance analysis that we're doing on a regular basis is suggesting a change, then we need to take that, those market conditions that we're seeing in the present, and plug them into that longer-term plan to see if those changes are material to our overall business objectives. And if they are, we need to consider possibly reevaluating that long-term plan. And this is where the agility of that zoom-in and zoom-out approach really takes effect. The other benefit we have of looking at that more near-term data in the context of our longer-term planning is that we're able to test opportunities and threats that may arise in that near-term. So we can look at our annual budget or a near-term forecast and plug in the effect of a certain event or an opportunity, an acquisition or a disposition, and see what that looks like in the context of the larger plan. Does it materially move the needle and require us to do a reevaluation? And this is really where that critical nature of eliminating silos comes in. And you've heard several of the folks on the call today talk about that. The need to pass data back and forth among the teams, to have that single source of data, that single source of truth that everybody's drawing from, so that we can evaluate those opportunities, so that we can pass those assumptions back and forth between the groups and make sure that we're comparing apples to apples. That way we can deliver relevant information to the decision makers in the organization and really spend time zeroing in on those results, managing those assumptions so that we arrive at the most accurate data, the most accurate forecasting to drive our business forward and use in strategic planning.
Andy, this is great, and I think you mentioned too, it's very consistent with everything we spoke about, the idea of eliminating silos, bringing data together, whether it's within the system itself or it's within some sort of a data warehouse. Those are all great things. I'm thinking about our 100 listeners and all of those who are going to watch this after this has been recorded. They're sitting in a position where they're thinking, I've got 5 steps to get to that point where I can even begin to think about this. It might even be 10 steps. I think about, for example, maybe a red flag that you see in companies, like maybe their chart of accounts doesn't really reflect the reality, or they've got property accountants who can change sub-accounts at will. What are some of those steps that you think about whenever you go into a client and they've got some cleanup to do? Porter talked about data governance being a predecessor to everything. What are some of those predecessors that some of the in our audience, both live and hearing us on the recording, should be considering?
Yeah, that's a great question, Chuck. And I think the old programming adage about garbage in, garbage out is really critical to this process. You know, a good data governance policy, the way we collect data, automating it as much as possible, and creating a shared workspace where we're not reliant on spreadsheets and the harrowing process of version control is really critical. If we're able to collect data that's accurate and reliable, and we're able to share that data across the different parts of the organization so that they can apply their experience and their judgment and really add value to that data, to take that raw data and turn it into insights and information, that's really critical. So, you know, to kind of sum that up, accurate data collection, transparent dissemination of the data, and really transparency and exposure of that single source of data across the organization is really critical.
Right, and I think it could be an assessment too of what are all of those data sources. So you have, whether it's your group or it's Todd's group coming in, or even Line Point group, you begin with some kind of an assessment. So all of those, again, hearing our call live and hearing it recorded, there has to be some assessment of what your starting point is, so that we can set the goal for the final end. So I really appreciate that. With that, Sarah, it looks like you've opened up all the phones, so I want to start just a big round of discussion here with our group. And Porter, we've sort of come full circle, and Andy, you shouldn't be worried about going last, because there's plenty more to discuss. I think it was good. Porter, a little bit, if you could, on describing that urge of energy, that level of effort of what it was before and what it is today, and what do you think it's going to be when you're finished?
Wow. Yeah. So, Chuck, in our prep calls for this, and we discussed the fact that the thing about budgeting and forecasting, and I mentioned that it seems like it's been a challenge for 25 years, at least in my observation. It's one of those things where the work expands to fill the time available, because everybody wants to have the most accurate forecast possible, and there's always that, boy, what else can I do? If I'm an analyst, what else can I do to make sure that this assumption is correct? What else can I do to make sure that this is accurate? There's a constant stream of new information coming in, and there's a temptation, or really an expectation that all that your forecast should reflect all available information. And if information is constantly coming in, then you find yourself just constantly updating that forecast. So a big process change that we've done, and I've seen this in other companies, is making that big decision. Don't do monthly forecasts. Do quarterly forecasts, particularly if you're a public company and only have a quarterly reporting requirement. And if you're going to do the quarterly, don't feel like you've got to update to the nth degree. Apply a materiality standard and really just focus on those needle movers. What are the events that have happened over the last 90 days that are really going to affect, have a material impact on the outcome of your company? And once you've got that, it's okay to stop there and move on to the next task. So a big part of it for us was, as we implemented Argus Enterprise, it's not that Argus Enterprise provided that much more technology over what we had over DynaBudget, but it did give us an opportunity to evaluate how much effort are we putting into this process, and where can we scale back the need for precision and make life a lot easier for our team.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Porter. Cecilia, I got to bring you in on that one, because we were talking about going from quarterly to monthly to weekly to continuous, and now Porter's talking about going from monthly to quarterly. in the opposite direction. So what's the level of effort here? What's the focus on and the benefit of continuous forecasting?
Well, you know, in the age of digital, in this digital age, right, people want everything yesterday. And so if you ask any executive, you know, do you want the latest number yesterday, of course they're going to say yes, right? So I think it's about finding a balance between what's the wish versus what's feasible. Right, because if you're going to have, and it also has to do with the processes that your current organization has in place. So if your current organization doesn't have anything automated, as an example, well, doing this on a, you know, daily or weekly basis, it's just not feasible, right? And even if you had your process fully automated, right? Well, actually, if you have your process fully automated, well, it's not a brainer, or no brainer, because then you're not relying on humans, right? You're just relying on the process to get you that information. I think a lot of us in the industry are trying to get to that place, right, where we can automate as much as possible. And to Porter's point, everybody acknowledges that it's been a painful process, but we're all finding solutions towards it.
Okay, all right. I'm going to give your voice just a quick break here, Cecilia, because I've got another question for you. And let me move to Nick. There was a question that was thrown out. Cecilia brought it up, and someone asked, "What's meant by automating recoveries? What does that mean in these systems?"
Is that a question for me?
Let's go to Nick. We'll give you a break. I think Nick can answer this one.
Yeah, sure. I think as we heard from Porter and others, it's definitely recoveries is challenging and complex. So whether you're building out recoveries in your core application like MRI or Yardi, which both have very good recoveries modules, or if you're doing it offline. The goal is to move it away from Excel, if possible, and have it integrated. So with Bearings, they've moved, they followed what Simon Property Group did and moved that into their Anaplan model. There's different places that you can do it, but I think that the key message is try to automate it within a core application, not doing it offline in Excel if at all possible, because you're just creating more work. And it ends up with more inconsistencies.
Got it. Nick, let me stay with you just for a second. We started to talk with Andy, and this idea of when you go into a client, and I think about, again, the clients that are on the call and the ones that are listening to this after, what are some of those key red flags to say you're not quite ready for this? We've got to make some changes in these three key areas or four key areas before we can begin moving with modeling or forecasting. During the assessments, you mentioned 10 to 12 weeks of deployment, but they've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah, they've got to be prepared for that, but I think that the key is to have a well-defined process. So at least in Bearings' case, for example, they already had a clear budgeting process. It was just very manual. And they didn't want to change the process because that would have significant change management implications on the large user community that was very dispersed and fragmented. So for them, it was, how can we take a very manual, somewhat messy process and streamline and automate that, but still give the end users something initially that followed a look and feel and a process that they were familiar with. And then over time, they'll look to fine-tune that. But phase one was very much, hey, let's get this up and running because our budgeting cycle kicks off soon, and we want to automate that first.
Got it. Todd, sometimes looking at a manual process and automating a manual process has been referred to, I may be showing my age here, but it was referred to as paving the cow path. And I don't know if you've ever heard that, but how about you when you're preparing for clients, what signifies they're ready or they've got some work to do?
Well, I think it's really the decision making and getting everybody on the same page with what they want to do. Getting in, like Porter brought up, you know, they might not want continuous forecasting at their organization. That's not important to them, and it doesn't, you know. Other companies, they have to decide and they have to all agree and get that top-down management support that this is the business process that we want to follow and this is what we want to achieve and this is our goal. And I think getting that all figured out ahead of time, the business process side is key and just getting everybody in agreement as to what the plan is. And then the technology can fall into place under that, but that's probably, in my mind, one of the key things we got to start with.
Okay. All right. Good. Andy, I'm going to throw this out to you, but I think I'm going to come right back to Todd. The market lease assumptions and other components, I could go out and do research on all of my tenants. I could go out and pull information in about whether a tenant might be their business is going to end, or I needed to forecast where the occupancy rates, and I want to see how well that's going to go. Those are all conditions that are going to impact my forecast. What do you think the maturity of using AI modeling to look at the public detail, the published detail, the performance of these tenants, the performance of these assumptions? Cecilia mentioned grouping like properties into groups so that the market lease assumptions are better. Isn't that a perfect dynamic for an artificial intelligence evaluation to predict and that kind of pattern recognition?
Yeah, Chuck. As you and I talked about, you know, the value in some of the tools that we have comes from the fact that data can be pulled in, and then people with experience and judgment in the space can apply those assumptions. But you're right, this is where the uncertainty comes in the overall process. As you know, MRI has invested quite a bit on the artificial intelligence side into the lease abstraction process. And the two things are actually relatively similar, because what we're doing is looking for those patterns within the data to identify areas where we can fine-tune those assumptions. You know, using AI to do that pattern recognition is something we talk about a lot here. We also talk about it in terms of predictive analytics. But one of the ways to do that is to begin to segment our database into related segments. And again, AI can help us identify what those segments are, because we're not just looking for patterns, we're looking for relationships within the data as well. And if we can begin to establish those patterns and those relationships, that's where AI can really add the value to fine-tune those assumptions. Now, I don't think there's a substitute for an analyst with years of experience in the market. And so that person's role begins to change a little bit from applying their judgment and experience to the number, to kind of reviewing it and validating it and vetting it, you know, as the AI begins to give some of the results.
Got it. Todd, we talked about before about anything affecting the operations that's going to increase revenue, decrease costs, changes in market condition. You're pulling in data, this idea of pulling in data of what a lease could look like if you had more co-working space, or what would happen if we could reduce the thermal load on a building and reduce the HVAC costs. All of those are impacting forecasts. Are you using that information this way?
Yeah, we are. We take, like, an example on the kind of artificial intelligence and forecasting as we're pulling in and looking at historical data. Like, let's say in a multifamily example, it's renewal rates, right? You can look back and anticipate, you know, the percentage of time that your tenants are renewing by geographic market and other factors. So you look at renewal rate, vacancy rate, and current rent, and then we pull in big, you know, market data. So we pull in, well, what are the average rents, and compare that to the, you know, your rent, and say, some of the predictions start to be, you know, based on these historical trends, what happens, what does occupancy look like over the next 6 months? And what happens if we increase marketing spend by 5%? Because we can also look at marketing spend and compare that to the impact that it has on occupancy. And what if we adjust the rents because the market rents are X? And so it starts to give you that, you know, look at that market data and help you understand where you might want to tweak or make changes and what the impact of those changes might be. So I think that's pretty new, at least, you know, within the last few years. But I think we're starting to see a lot more real-life applications of that, you know, predictive analytics, you know, imposed on things like our example of the kind of multifamily market rents and occupancy and what happens based on, you know, inputs that you can control. So really interesting right. area, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that in the next.
Yeah, I think that's where big changes are going to start coming, because we're already seeing it in some companies that are starting to use that a lot more, as Andy mentioned, and there are several others within the industry. So, all right, Cecilia, I'm going to come back to you because I think we want to explore a little bit more on automating recovery.
Sorry, Chuck, just one point on that. That was a very good point. And I think what we're seeing now in the marketplace is, you know, particularly for like multifamily or affordable housing, firms are starting to bring in data from other sources. So, you know, Blackstone did a big implementation for Invitation Homes, where they have over 80,000, you know, affordable rental homes. And you can't afford to have your agents go and check on those on a regular basis. It's too expensive. So they have IoT devices that are feeding in data from the houses. They also have the tenants' credit scores and other data about their payment history. So they can then use probability modeling to say, what's the probability that this tenant will renew? What's the probability this tenant is actually getting into financial difficulty and may vacate early? And they can also run statistics to say, well, this property was rented to a family of three, but their utility usage is going through the roof. So that tells us either there are more occupants or something else is going on. So it flags it that that's a property we need to check on.
Yeah, those. I think it's interesting. And again, I've heard it already just this past week, looking at using artificial intelligence for anticipating those things. So, Porter, I'm going to ask you this one based on that question. If you knew ahead of time that your tenants are having difficulty, or you knew there was an issue with tenants, you could create some sort of an intervention, right? You go check on them and see how it's going with their occupancy, with their lease, with their business.
Oh yeah, we can and we do. I mean, I think our portfolio is a scale that, you know we've got those types of relationships with our tenants where we can anticipate those things. But absolutely.
And Cecilia, you mentioned 88 properties that you're managing, 16 million square feet. Tenant interventions, anticipating what's going on with the tenant in order to have better precision with your leasing assumptions. Does that make sense to you?
It does, but it really depends on the type of property that you have, right? So, for instance, if it's a strip center, we don't really manage that. but if it's a closed mall, then that's a different story. So you have to see how that's applicable and how you can apply the technologies to your different asset types.
All right, and then expand on your automated recoveries. I think we wanted to get a little deeper on that one.
Well, this past year, we put a lot of focus in automating our recoveries and accrual functionality into MRI. This is a daunting task, as many of you know, for property owners, because it requires complex calculations to determine the costs that are passed on to tenants who benefit from the common area maintenance. Excuse me one second. Okay. So like upgrades and reimbursements of real estate taxes. With 88 properties, we had to do it manually via spreadsheets, and it was extremely painful. And the process made it more complicated due to the unique nature that retail tenant leases that provide for unique and complex billing provisions, right? Not all tenants were the same. And so through MRI, we were able to tailor those the recoveries tools, including the recovery of capital improvements that met their exact specifications, right, for each tenant. So the tool allows us to build tenants certain capital expenditures using different methodologies and billing periods, like the useful life, lump sum, and remaining leasing term, and of course, in accordance with each individual lease. So that to us was very helpful in automating the recovery process. And we also did the same thing for the accruals.
Got it. Thanks. No, that helped clarify that a little bit. I appreciate that. Andy, I want to come back to you. And when you think about integrating this data, are you pulling in information from all systems, like including a integrated work order management system? And if so, with what type, how are you using that information to enhance the accuracy of the forecast?
You know, it's interesting. One of the examples that we talk about here is an organization down in Texas that put into place a preventative maintenance program. And so as they instituted that program and began to see results on the buildings that they began to implement it in, they saw a significant reduction in the number of service calls that they were receiving. They saw a reduction in the amount of kind of ad hoc maintenance that they needed to do. So as they began to collect that data on a small group of buildings, they expanded the program across others, but they were able to use that data from implementing that preventative maintenance program and adjust their approach to budgeting resources, to budgeting future expenses on the equipment in the buildings that they were maintaining. So, again, it's a sliver of the process of the data, but it's a way to pull data in from another source and evaluate it in the context of your overall expense budget in this case and see what those types of changes can drive going forward.
Got it. Todd, I wanted to think about the inputs that drive continuous type forecasting as we were discussing. You mentioned automating, connecting to other data sources. But do some of the interfaces that you have, the user interfaces that you mentioned, are much simpler, especially like in Forecast Manager, is that allowing teams members remotely to go in and update their section of the forecast? That was for Todd. Does that make sense? Okay, then let me transfer that to Nick. The continuous forecasting process, we saw your diagram that had connected to a lot of data sources, but could it be that some of these panels need to have user input, and this allows this role-based security allows for people to input the things they're allowed to update?
Yeah, so the role-based security does allow the asset manager or portfolio manager to define who has access to what in terms of updates. But what from a continuous reforecast perspective, it's really about having a process, an integrated process to update actuals into a model and having a different version. So you've got a budget version which is locked down, and then you have a reforecast version of a model that's updated each month from actuals from your source systems. And really then a lot of firms are looking at that from a materiality perspective. So if there's a material event, a CapEx event or a major lease event, you'll want to see, well, what's the impact on the asset? And the reforecast is looking at how does that compare to our budget, and that may then drive the behavior to say, well, we actually need to run a reforecast now against our initial plan for that asset because we've got better information. So I think to Porter's point earlier, it's all about using the information that we have and using that to get a better picture of the future and then make informed decisions.
Got it. And Porter, since he mentioned you, this is kind of like the debate. If you get called out, you're the next one that right. I call to. Right? You mentioned in your slide shifting to cloud-based solutions. is your budgeting and forecasting process, is there a next phase for that, a next turn of the crank of what it is you're going to try to do?
Well, I mean, we're happy and committed to the Argus Enterprise platform. We're currently on-prem. My understanding is that there's a strategy there for them to move to the cloud, and we're excited about that. So, eventually it's all going to be up there, and I think that opens up a lot more possibilities for data integration and data sharing. So we'll see where that goes.
Got it. Does your forecasting focus more on short term? As you mentioned, maybe we shouldn't be forecasting out 5, 10, 20 years. Is it more short term forecasting in order to realize the level of accuracy you're looking for, or is it more
we take a long view. I mean, we've got a lot of development projects going on and large scale long-term developments one of the nice things about being in the financial position we're in is that we can make long-term investments. So for our larger scale, all of our models go out 25, 30 years. We're not reporting on it necessarily that way, but we are looking at asset valuation. And again, that's one of the nice things about sort of the cross-functional capabilities of Argus Enterprise, both as a budgeting and forecasting as well as valuation tool. We've got this famous report internally called the 11-year sheet that looks out many, many years.
Cecilia, what about Urban Edge? Are you focusing out that far, 11, 12, 15, 20 years?
Absolutely. We that's why we use the tools that we use, because when we were going through our selection process, MRIIM allowed us to go 20 years, which was very useful to us.
Okay. All right. And Andy, so what's kind of next in the turn of the crank? We talked about this evolution, AI probably being on the horizon. What do you see as being next for the budgeting and forecasting function?
Yeah, I think, one of the themes that we see is the, ability to expose data to as many of the people who need it in the context that they need it. So we've talked about role-based security and restrictions, access to certain accounts, but really kind of the consumerization of big data and taking big data out of a word and actually giving people the ability to be hands-on with that data and flex it so that they can play with those what-if scenarios and really drive to make better assumptions using those tools, but really putting that data in the hands of the people who can consume it and drive those decisions more effectively.
Good, good. Todd, I'll give you the last word. What's next on the horizon for accuracy, precision? Yeah.
I think it was just everything that was just said was I would agree with that, and I think we're kind of in the same area, pulling in market data to help, get things more accurate and precise. Using predictive analytics to start providing that type of information, the what-if capabilities so that you can model, and if we change this MLA, what does that do to my NOI? What does that do as it rolls up across the portfolio? So those are all things that I see, coming in the near future as well.
Very good. Very good. Well, Sarah, I'm going to bring you back in because, as always happens, I've got 20 more cards of questions, and we're out of time. And so I want to thank everyone on our panel and all of the contributions from all of our efforts, everybody that took the time to dial in. Any closing thank yous, Sarah, and other thoughts?
Yes, thank you, Chuck, and thanks to all the panelists. I agree with Chuck. Those presentations were great, and I really appreciate all your contributions. Our next webinar will be on the commercial real estate and technology strategy, and it will cover different components of a strategy that are important when considering developing the strategy. So we'll go over that actually on September 19th. Our webinars are also available as podcasts, so if you don't have time to actually view the recording or sit in on a session, you can download the podcast to our website and then listen to the recording maybe on your way to work. To do that, either click on the link here or visit our website. And last but not least, I want to thank all of you for joining us today and taking the time out of your busy schedules to be with us, and really appreciate you attending, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.